the idea of owning a record shop to me personally, it seems kind of funny. Like I think I would find it like a little bit painful selling records.
Well, it's
Do you know what
funny
I
you say
mean?
that because I've never really considered myself a collector.
Right,
I've
me
always
neither.
bought music to listen to,
Yeah.
and then of course I'd be getting collections coming in, picking them up quite cheap or whatever, secondhand stuff, and then finding out, this is the great thing, finding out about stuff I've never listened to,
Yeah.
and then falling in love with it, and then not wanting to sell
Yeah, exactly.
it,
Yeah, I can totally imagine that. Like,
it's difficult
yeah.
because.
Just put the price up.
I'll sell it, but yeah, everything's got its price. And I'm still struggling with that because, I've got almost every record now that I sell. I think, oh, that's nice. I kind of sometimes I haven't listened to it. I'll listen to it before I post it. I think, oh, that's nice. Should have kept that.
exactly.
But I've got to try and be self-disciplined
Yeah,
about it.
absolutely.
Otherwise, I'm just gonna,
Do you remember the
need a
one?
bigger house,
You remember the one I bought off you was the Crusaders, right? Yeah, because that was not on my radar at all. I mean, it's not so romantic a story, but I was working away and I remember I had Spotify Discover on, and that just came on. I was like, yeah, I'm gonna get that. Yeah, suddenly just searched it on Discogs. That was it.
Because I mean that's the sort of my starting point in terms of questions is the record that you've bought. Where
Okay.
does that fit in the context of your sort of current collection, if you like?
Oof. Well, that's a tough question. I don't think it does in any particular way. It's just I liked it, so I bought it. I don't even remember the record that well. I couldn't remember a specific track off it. I remember when I started this thing on Discogs, like when I started getting back into records. I had a little kind of, I guess, a sort of unspoken to myself rule, which was that I'll hear a track I like and I think I want the album that track is from, but I won't allow myself to listen to the rest of the album until it's arrived. So I get this kind of bonus kind of, I know the track I love, I want that album, and I get this like immense pleasure from listening to the whole thing from start to finish.
Like in the old days, when you
Yeah,
go to the shop,
yeah,
you couldn't wait to get it home and put it
exactly.
on the
But there's a
day.
massive temptation, like knowing that I've bought that album now to get on whatever Spotify or whatever and listen to the rest of it. I would forbid myself from doing that.
I mean, that's an illustration of how, let's say, Spotify, I mean, I would say cheapens the experience. I mean, it's made it
Yeah.
different. You can say, oh, I really want that album. Okay, I can listen to it here and now.
Yeah.
I don't need it now. That sort
Yeah.
of thing.
There's not with it, with it with there's not even so much of a physical act of putting
No.
on a song or a record, right?
It's very interesting that people in the shop would buy records, or they'd look at record, they'd go away and they'd listen to it on Spotify and then say, yes, I do want it, even though they have heard it all and have got obviously other means of hearing it. So there's something about the record itself. So the Crusaders, had you come across them before in any
Never,
context?
never. I just happened to be listening to the Discover playlist, and I was like, "Yeah, oh, I like this." Yeah, it's like if I remember, it's kind of bluesy, soulful.
Well, I mean, they were originally the Jazz Crusaders,
Right.
and then they became the Crusaders, and they made a huge number of albums. They moved from sort of soul jazz
Yeah.
to, you'd say, soul funk
Yeah.
kind of thing,
Yeah,
really.
and that's my kind of tip really on the funk side.
But the musicians, they all played with the likes of Steely Dan, Joni Mitchell's great
Oh,
albums.
really?
All the Crusaders were on.
Oh, Wayne Henderson.
A lot of this kind of funk based, almost getting towards sort of smooth jazz type thing, and it's a real difficult line to define, where that is. But yeah, Larry Carton played guitar on, I think, Hill Street Blues theme tune with Larry Carton,
Oh, nice.
and they're on so many records, these guys. But they had a big hit with Street Life with Randy Crawford,
Oh,
which
yeah,
everyone
that's
knows. That'd be there.
that's a favorite of mine.
Oh, is it?
When I DJ at parties, it's just become this kind of in joke because my name's Steve. People shout Steve Life.
That is the Crusaders. Yeah. Which is a great. Have you got the? Is it the album that's got like a, or maybe the 12-inch single, great long extended cut of Street Life? It's really good.
Must add that to my list.
So you DJ?
Yeah, occasionally.
And what kind of stuff do you play out?
I mean, it really depends, but I've got a gig semi-regular, about monthly, in Peckham Levels. So that's a great gig. That's a Sunday gig. And so because it starts very early evening, people just milling around and, you know, just... So it's very... got a total free reign. I normally play a lot of kind of Brazilian-y stuff, a little bit of hip-hop, nothing... You know, just jumping around, but nothing too intense. Yeah. And then if there's enough of a crowd later on, we'll get a little bit housey or a little bit of more active, like 80s, dancey, funky sort of stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. All vinyl?
No, they've only got one deck there. So I have to bring back up MP3 stuff.
Oh,
yeah,
okay. Sadly. Right. Okay. Do you ever play vinyl out when you're DJing?
Yeah, I mean, I will do. I'll take a bag for this one.
Yeah.
Always. Just as much as I can carry, really.
Right.
Which is not that much these days. In fact, I'd love to get a gig where it is strictly vinyl only.
It's a bit bizarre to have a place where they've got regular DJs and only have one deck, isn't it?
I mean, it's just most DJs have their stuff on MP3 now on a little stick that, you know, fits in your key ring. You understand it.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, that box there is probably the worst purchase I've ever made because it fits 100 records.
Yeah.
I thought, that's great, but how am I going to carry that anyway? I've carried that to Peckham like 4 or 5 times
that's ridiculous.
It's a nightmare. So I spend what I make on taxi fare, basically, to carry it.
Yeah, that's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah.
So the Crusaders, that's like, it's not that you're a Crusaders completist or anything. It's
not
just
at all.
A track you liked and you bought the
just
album.
And in fact, it's a slightly off of what I would normally go for, I think. Yeah, let me have a look through and I'll tell you which ones I've got around a similar sort of time of Discogs. Teddy Pendergrass.
Okay,
Oh, this is actually quite similar in a way, I think, to the Southern Comfort.
Oh, Tony Williams.
Maybe a bit more jazzy.
Yeah, well, I mean, he obviously, he played with, Mark Davis, didn't he? And all right, Stanley Clarke, Herbie Hancock.
Yeah.
Tom Scott.
Yeah.
Oh, they're all around that same kind of era and style, aren't they?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, you got Cecil Taylor on one track as well. George Benson. I was just reading about George Benson when he played Albert Hall recently. Did you hear about that? Yeah, so he did two nights at the Albert Hall, and I read a review of the first night. It was great. He was on fine form and everything.
Mm.
But the second night, he lost his voice. So he came out and he played, I think, Breezin' or something. Then he played another instrumental.
Yeah.
Then he played another instrumental.
Yeah.
And then he started to try and sing, and he couldn't. And so he sort of carried on playing instrumental, and people started kind of booing him and everything.
Oh, no.
It turned out, you know, he'd got laryngitis, and rather than cancel it, he came out and intended playing just instrumental. But, you know, people were booing and so on, and he walked off after, I think, 45 minutes.
Oh, that's horrible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And for me, I'd rather go and see George Benson playing guitar.
So here's, like, a bunch. I think I got all of these off Discogs around the same sort of time. It's kind of a mixture of, like, breaks I really like and stuff for parties, you know, a bit more dancey sort of stuff.
Right.
So that Messages from the Stars.
Ra Band.
Yeah.
Tell me about the Ra Band. Don't know.
I don't know anything about them, really. I just heard that song.
Okay.
I was like, I need that album. So I was in Madrid when I heard this at a night where Louis Vega was playing. It wasn't that. It was the next night. Same place. I'd been to see Ebo Taylor.
Oh, yeah.
And there was like a kind of, included in the ticket, it was like a little after party, and there were these DJs, played some really good stuff. Just got a great just a great little dancey groove, I think. You know, it was a nice, small little club, very low light, yeah, and just good vibes. And yeah, that song came on and I could just sit, you know, I felt, you know, how yeah, much of a groove it was. You know?
Yeah. Let's see what else this part. So these these are ones that you've bought recently on the same basis. You've heard a track and then gone looking for the album.
So when I decided, I'm going to buy records again, I just started making lists of albums I wanted. And like prioritized, you know, so every now and every, and I had a rule as well, every fortnight I allow myself to buy two albums, so I just buy whatever I could find for a decent price on Discogs. Right,
have you paused that?
And yeah, that's right, on pause. Yeah. I started breaking the rule, so yeah, I kind of
exactly. That's what rules are for, isn't it? Yeah. So you got Dionne Warwick, Just Being Myself, so that's,
yeah, that's a great album.
73
actually.
Yeah, okay, so it's after her kind of, you know, great period with Bacharach, but before some of the more slushy kind of disco-y things, I suppose.
Yeah,
is it?
That one I bought because the track which is just a great hip hop break, which I've done something with myself.
Right.
Made a little hip hop instrumental track.
So you heard it from someone else sampling it originally, did you?
No, I think I just heard it and thought, I want to sample that. And then I thought, I want to have that album now. Oh, it has been sampled, actually, but I sampled it independently.
Pretty good. So you got Dancing Machine Jackson 5.
That is some record, my God. I actually think the Jackson 5 are so underappreciated. Like, I didn't know about this album. This is an absolute cracker. I heard I Am Love, and that's a phenomenal track.
I don't know if I know it at all, actually.
Really?
I don't know this album.
It's kind of epic.
Yeah.
You kind of need to listen to the whole thing, start to finish, right, really, I think.
1974. So, the Jacksons, have you got other Jacksons or Michael Jackson?
I've got some Michael Jackson, from back in the day when possibly my brother's collection or when I just picked them up in charity shops when I was first getting into records, yeah. I think I've got Thriller, Bad.
Right.
I'm not sure what else.
Yeah. Is that stuff you would buy now?
Yeah. yeah, that's stuff I want to have. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, some of that, you know, the Quincy Jones produced stuff is...
Yeah, which is your favourite of those albums?
I think Off the Wall, to be honest.
Yeah,
I just
agree.
Think it's just so, yeah, there's just so much, there's so much to that. But Thriller's a bit of a cracker as well.
Yeah, I was looking because someone else I was talking to, he mentioned his dad coming home with the Eagles' Greatest Hits.
Yeah,
he went, oh god, but that's outsold Thriller now.
Really? Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, wow. Bob James
4. Now that's interesting.
I've got
because
all the Bob. Oh, maybe I'm missing one of them actually. I'm a bit of a Bob James collectionist.
Right. Okay. Because I really love 1, 2 and 3.
Oh, really? This is the one with Tapan Z, isn't it?
Yeah. So you say you're a bit of a Bob Jones completist. I mean, you'd have to have about 1,000 albums.
Just the, how many the 1, 2, 3, 4. Yeah.
Oh, okay, right. Yeah.
I think there's a 5 as well, isn't there?
I can't remember. I mean, I've got either. Quite a few with, you know, different titles, not numbered anymore.
Yeah, funnily enough, though, I started off with this and then I was like, yeah, this Bob James cat. It's like... But he seems like the sort of person who's just been, he's got his fingerprints everywhere.
Yeah, absolutely. Was your route into Bob James again through hearing a sample?
Yeah, I was hearing that. And I always get like a special pleasure from hearing a song going, ah, oh, I know that.
Yeah.
I know that from hip hop.
Right.
And
yeah.
I'm just going, that's Everyday People by Arrested Development.
Yeah.
Wow. You know, and then I just like, and then I listen to the song and just love the song.
Yeah. We did a night in my shop, a sampling night, coming at it from that angle. Okay, well, here's something you know really well, but actually here's the original vinyl that has been sampled. A lot of it, obviously, is from older jazz stuff. Mm. But yeah, no, it was great because it's an education for me the other way.
Yeah.
You know?
I get such a kick out of that sort of stuff. Like, the, you know, just going on it, connecting music back and forth, and even like cover versions of stuff as well. I like to listen, like, there are certain songs I just think, they just spawned so many great versions. Like, one of my favourites is People Make the World Go Round. I don't even know who made the original. I don't know if I haven't got it on vinyl, actually. Yeah, Jackson 5 have done a version. There's a reggae version. They're all brilliant.
Right, yeah.
I had this idea once, so I'd quite like to do a few little like mixes, like small mixes, but just the same song, all the different versions of
yeah,
it.
Yeah, that'd be good. And try and get them in the right key.
Yeah, exactly.
So this next record on your pile...
That's one for parties.
Breakwater.
I love that.
That's the name of the band, Breakwater. Splashdown, the name of the album.
Yeah, you describe the cover to me? That's like...
it's like every band of that that era would dress in sort of generally a bit more sparkly in their suits. They've got a sort of prototype UGG boots on.
Yeah. bright yellow. Prototype UGG boots.
Shiny one-piece suits. Yeah. And you can just tell how funky they are from looking at it.
And they seem to be all stood in the shower.
They are, in a white-tiled big, or an abattoir.
When I saw that, I just thought I would love to have been a fly on the wall in the conversation when they were deciding, okay, what are we going to do for our album cover?
Yeah.
but I had to have it. And that has the original song, which I didn't know about, probably not that many people know about, considering how famous the famous version is. It's a Daft Punk robot rock.
Oh, right, yes.
And it's so similar to the Daft Punk version.
Right.
I've played this out at parties and people just think it's Daft Punk, right?
Which track on here is it?
It's called Release the Beast.
So did Daft Punk sample it or it's just a rip-off?
Oh, I mean, I don't know the ins and outs of how they would have done it. But it feels a bit of a rip-off to me, slightly. Especially since they, I don't know, you make your own mind.
Yeah.
Yeah, with that, I get a real kick out of it because I get the best of both worlds between introducing something to people that they don't already know without them knowing it, in the sense that they think they know what it is. One of the most annoying things, I'm sure most DJs will say the same, is people... is you go to places and people only really want to hear what they know.
Yeah.
And I just think, why do you have DJs in that case?
Yeah, exactly. get a generic playlist.
Right,
And leave it on. Yeah.
Join the queue in the Spotify playlist or something.
Exactly, which is what a lot.
It's a jukebox, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Now, this is interesting. We've got a dance fantasy inspired by Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
That is one of my absolute favourites.
Montana. I'm guessing this is... very synth heavy, is it?
Yeah.
Vocals by Sister Sledge.
Oh, I did not know that. Yeah, I mean, there's some really interesting stuff on that.
So, 1978, that makes sense. I mean, I had a few records that were... there was one by Gene Page that was all kind of... it had a Star Wars theme, Close Encounters theme, and all kind of space disco type stuff.
Yeah.
I've got to say, I'm... interested in that because I was never into Star Wars. Close Encounters came out around the same time and I loved it, but I've not seen this.
Oh, really?
So how did you come across that?
I remember who I bought this from off Discogs because he contacted me. So he's leaving the country, so got deals on, got to get rid of my stock. So I just plundered it. And I think this is one of the records I got on that. And I think I just bought it off the back of the title.
So, yeah, next one on your pile, Dexter Wants a Life on Mars.
Yeah, I mean, that's a very similar tip. Like, he's kind of 70s synth guys getting really into this kind of interplanetary, interstellar ideas. I just heard the one track off that and had to have the album.
Do you know anything about Dexter Wants a Life?
No. I've looked him up since and... haven't really found anything that's jumped out at me quite as much as this one track.
So you come across this again the same way, just hearing a track?
So my brother and I share music that we hear a lot. Yeah. I think this is one he sent me, like he Shazammed it.
Right.
Can't remember where from.
Right.
Yeah.
Your next one, never heard of. Gina Socchio.
Oh, that's Italo Disco.
Right, okay.
That's pure disco, basically.
Right,
just,
okay, that's a bit later, 81.
The track there, the key one is what's it called again?
Is that something you play out?
Yeah, oh yeah, definitely. Yeah. This is a banker.
Is it? Right. So that's kind of, yeah, straight ahead disco, really.
Yeah. So like my sort of rationale for buying is kind of is split really between playing out as a DJ that justifies it as a tax deductible expense, or just something I want to listen to at home, or something I want to sample to make music.
Right. Yeah, okay. Yeah. So a record like that, Gino Socchio. Socchio? Right.
Yeah.
Would you ever sit and listen to that on your own?
Nah, probably not.
It's definitely for playing
out. It's for parties. You know, I want to see people enjoy it. I want to see people like get into it.
Yeah.
Because of the, you know, I do listen to it at home, but only
to check it.
I like to sort of like when I'm in the mindset of like, say before I go for a gig, I'm like, what am I going to bring, and kind of just get in the mood a little bit, think about what goes with it, you know. But yeah, if it's just for me, just to sit and listen, probably wouldn't do something that dancey.
But this next one on the pile, you probably would, Azimuth.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, that's I love that.
Yeah.
Having said that, the primary reason for buying that was the song I heard heard played out at a festival, and it blew my mind. I think I've heard it had heard it before, and it was played by Daphne. He's a DJ. He's part of Caribou.
Oh, right.
And it was a Dimensions festival in Croatia. He played this set. It was all kind of very dancey music.
Yeah.
And he just dropped this in the middle of it. And I was like, wow, imagine just being able to, you know, in front of like, no one's expecting that.
Which and one? What, Jazz Carnival? Was it? Or,
yeah. It's a phenomenal track.
So the album's Light as a Feather. What year?
79, yeah.
79, yeah.
Yeah.
Because you mentioned you play a fair amount of Brazilian stuff.
Yeah.
What other... Because at the moment, all of these, they're all in a kind of, what you'd say, well, some are sort of 73, 74, but they're definitely on the disco side, aren't they?
Yeah.
You know? How wide is your sort of Brazilian collection, if you like?
Most of the Brazilian... I'll tell you what, like, Brazilian music is fucking expensive,
is
I think. Yeah, yeah. It's very collectible. Right. Like, Brazilians are really into it.
Yeah.
And a lot of people here are as well.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of records I'd love to have, but often I look at, you know, some people like Jim Meyer, his records sell for like 500 quid or whatever, which I'm not really prepared to go for. I mean, I've got it all on MP3s.
Sure. And, you know, so you can still play it out.
I play a lot of stuff, but like I say, like, I bought this because I want to play Jazz Carnival in the right moment. I haven't really found it yet. I'm not a headlining DJ.
You want to recreate that moment. You've heard it with thousands in Croatia, yeah?
The thing is, I've actually seen Daphne play since then, and he did it again, but it was really disappointing. You know, like when you see a stand-up comedian twice in the space of a year or something, and they do the same thing. Exactly. Like, oh, I wasn't special.
Yeah.
But Jazz Carnival is a phenomenal track. You should check it out.
No, Azimuth. Yeah. No, I know it very well. Patrice Rushen's the next one on this. This is the pile of recent Discogs purchases based on a single track.
Yeah.
Now
that's one that I bought to play out.
So Patrice Rushen, Straight from the Heart.
Yeah.
Again, very, very 80s disco.
Yeah.
Some of that kind of stuff, a little slushy, perhaps.
Slushy?
Don't you think? Not that track, but...
I'm not enamoured with the whole, you know, every piece of every album at all.
Yeah, yeah.
If I bought it because of one song to play out, everything else is kind of a bonus to me. And I haven't, and a lot of this stuff I haven't even got round to. I mean, I've listened to it all, but sometimes you need to listen three or four times before you really notice something you like about something else.
Yeah.
You know? And,
yeah.
And that hasn't really happened with. Apart from that Remind Me track is very nice. I think this is a good album. But some of those other ones, like the Ra Brand one, I kind of remember thinking, you know, for the rest.
Right, okay. One track, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, the next one on here, Deodato, Night Cruiser. That's not one of his, I know. What drew you to that?
Yeah, his name has popped up before. Can't remember how I knew him. I think the track that I heard was Skating.
Right,
and that is quite a sort of fun, slightly cheesy, funky track.
Do you know his earlier stuff on CTI?
No, not really.
Oh, right. Well, so he had a big hit with the 2001 theme that Zarathustra.
Right.
On CTI, and I think Bob James
was
probably involved in that.
Yeah.
All of those people.
Yeah.
So the I think it's two particular albums on CTI that are fantastic, but this is obviously a later one on Warner Brothers called Night Cruiser.
Mm.
Uncle Funk's a track on there. So is this one, because I mean it's quality stuff, Deodato.
Mm.
Is this one you would listen to for your own pleasure, or is it just you've got it for a killer
track?
This is
a bit of a hybrid, this one, I think. Yeah, I think, I mean, with playing out, it's often, I mean, that is it's definitely one I would play out on the Sunday early evening sort of vibes, but as soon as there's a bit of an expectant crowd, sometimes you kind of got to give them something a bit more energetic.
Yeah, this is a bit, well, I don't know this one, but his earlier albums probably made me a bit, I don't know, is it right to say complex?
Complex. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. Possibly. But then, I don't know, I'm often torn. Sometimes I just want to do that anyway. It depends on my mood.
You've got to like what you're playing, haven't you?
Exactly.
You've got to get something from it yourself.
Yeah.
Not just, okay, all right, they'll all dance to Chic, but you want a bit more than that. You know?
Yeah, I mean, I am quite often a bit uncompromising like that, I think.
You've not been booed off yet.
I haven't been booed off yet, exactly.
So our next one, Leon Haywood, and Come and Get Yourself Some. And you've got Wilton Felder on here, who's from Crusaders.
Right.
There. Who else? Gene Page, who we mentioned, who did that Star Wars disco thing. Who else is on there? Ray Parker Jr.
That's another one. I think I got that one because of a hip-hop sample. It's a very famous one. Possibly Biggie Smalls, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's one of those tracks that... I want to do something freaky to you.
It rings a bell.
It's one of those tracks that's like, you know, made in this era that you're kind of unplayable now. Because
lyrically.
Not lyrically, but because they've got like sex noises in.
Oh, right, yeah, yeah.
I love it, but it's a bit weird if I play out as a DJ.
Yeah, well, I don't know. Try it. Have you tried it?
I have, yeah. It was a bit weird. Oh, Snoop Dogg, I think.
Oh, right. See, you're telling me Snoop Dogg sampled that.
It was Dr. Dre, Snoop Dogg, one of
those.
Yeah,
one of those. Which I wouldn't, you know, that's a reference that kind of passed me by because the whole era. I'm kind of having to educate myself on because, you know, I was doing other things.
Right, yeah.
That's what I mean.
So I think my interest like in music kind of went, I got to where I am now via hip-hop via drum and bass, more or less, with a kind of fairly rich background in everything I was into before I got into drum and bass, which was, you know, all of the classic like rock stuff. And
right, Delegation, The Promise of Love. I don't know anything about that, but it's got a sultry woman looking through some
peering through
Venetian
the
blinds.
Yes.
But on the back, that gives you some clues. Three band members, they got their tops off, but really their bodies don't merit that.
there was no need to hit the gym, I think.
Another kind of late 70s funk soul type.
I mean, that's Oh Honey is quite a big track now.
Oh, right.
At the moment, I think I've heard it played out quite a lot by various DJs. I think a lot of people, it's in a lot of people's consciousness now.
Is it?
But
right,
although the band's possibly a little bit obscure.
Yeah.
But the Oh Honey is like sort of thing that someone might play at the end of a night of a rave or something.
Yeah,
you know, just to kind of like you know, when everyone's loved up, sort of.
And your final one on this pile, well, I mean, what a lineup. Minnie Riperton, Love Lives Forever, obviously quite a late album, but a little sticker on the front featuring Stevie Wonder, George Benson, Roberta Flack, Michael Jackson and Tom Scott. Mm. Well, you can't go wrong with that.
That's like an A-list.
Yeah. Absolutely. What's the record like?
Though? Here we go is a real favourite of mine. If I'm playing out, actually I heard this at a club. I was like, I have to have this, and I'll be really happy if I play out of an evening and I feel like the situation is right for that song. Then that's a good night.
So, this what we've done. We've sort of jumped into, let's say, the middle where you are now.
Yeah.
Which currently, and that could be just today's mood, is soul funk, late 70s, early 80s.
Yeah.
Kind of nothing later than that, really.
No, not really.
No.
I do buy new stuff, like stuff that was out this year or last year.
Right.
Occasionally. Okay. Having this list of like stuff I want to own on vinyl leaves me with this question. Like, if I buy on vinyl music that's out now, it means that's something that I think maybe that's going to last for me. So it's got to be, I've got to have a feeling about it that it's quite special to buy something on vinyl now.
What's an example of something you bought recently?
I've got a few things. I've got the Childish Gambino album, which I really like. I was thinking about getting the Thundercat album, but I haven't done that yet. There's the Toshio Matsuura group. Have you heard of them? This is interesting because it harks back to a lot of stuff I was really into as a kid.
Well, you mentioned Thundercat. I mean,
that
sold really well. But again, that is really harking back to the 70s.
It is, yeah. Yeah, and even the kind of the featured artists on that are people from that era, right?
Which is something I was discussing the other day with someone, that the best of what's coming out now is really tends to be a kind of throwback in many ways.
That's true. Oh, I forgot one. This is a Gold Dust, that one.
Ah, beautiful. I love this series. So this is Esther Phillips. Yeah. This one's from A Whisper to a Scream on Kudu.
Yeah, I go mad for that. Home is Where the Hatred Is.
Yes.
What a fantastic version. And
there's a series of, I think, three or four of these Esther Phillips ones on Kudu. And yeah, I mean, it's Creed Taylor, so it's basically an offshoot of CTI. So it's all the same musicians that we're talking about on the early Diodato, and on the George Benson, on the Bob James.
Right.
But these ones, I think, are exceptional. But yeah, Esther Phillips in this period is fantastic. Again, she had more sort of disco hits a little bit later, didn't she?
That version of Home Is Where the Hatred Is one of my all-time favourites. And it's just like, so it just almost makes me cry every time I hear it.
Can you bear to put it on something?
Oh, yeah.
What we'll do, we'll have a listen and then we'll do a post-mortem on you.
Yeah. Sure. Well, it's, if I'm not mistaken, it's a Gil Scott-Heron song, right? And this version pisses all over his version, I think, musically. The Gil Scott-Heron version was great, but the musical treatment of that song, it just kind of brings all of the sadness and soul into it, like, you know, it's perfect for me.
I regret selling this one, actually, I've got to say.
Really? Yeah, yes, I bet. Yeah. I could never sell that, God.
No, it's one of those things I didn't have then in my collection, Esther Phillips. I kind of sort of knew of her, probably from the later stuff. When I got hold of those, I'd play them a lot and made the mistake of putting them out on the shelves to sell, you know, but I've kept a couple of them. So can we go back to the beginning then? Because, you know, what one of the things that interests me is the influence, if you like, of the music that's around you growing up, if you can remember that.
Yeah, so my first contact with vinyl, at least, or with music, really, that I can remember, came from when my dad was from like a very working class background, and then he ended up becoming a sort of left school at 15, worked in a law firm, ended up becoming partner and was quite rich by the time I was 3 or 4, something like that. And we lived in a big house. And he probably went a bit crazy with all the money, and he bought a load of jukeboxes. He loved these old, like, what are they called? Wurlitzer. Yeah, Wurlitzer jukebox.
So the big American-style ones.
Yeah. Well, like, various ones. There were, like, ones...
Well, they're
like,
German, actually, I think, aren't they?
But, well, really. Yeah, I think my favourite one was... I don't know what make it was, but it was a bit more... Maybe a bit more Spartan, in a sense, like, the buttons were a bit more clunky.
Mm-hmm.
But I have some very early memories of seeing these things, like these, like, claw hand things, selecting records and hearing all the sounds, and the sound of the needle and the... thing. And so all those old, they were old, like 50s and 60s records, really.
Well, the rock and roll? Or
rock and roll, yeah. Mainly, yeah. The Do Ron Ron,
okay.
That sort of stuff. That's probably the one I remember the most. I don't know what else.
So so the music he was playing was from a previous era.
Oh, yeah. Time, yeah. Yeah, definitely. But then, he also had a record collection, like LPs, which are... don't really remember discovering until a bit later. So that's when I got into rock, as opposed to rock and roll. So, you know, Beatles, Stones and Led Zeppelin and stuff like that.
At quite a young age for you?
Yeah, I guess so. And I got really into it when I remember at primary school, I thought, like, rock and roll was just, like, the pinnacle of all music, as in 50s rock and roll. Chuck Berry.
Yeah.
My dad was really into Chuck Berry, and I loved Chuck Berry. And then I think when I was probably 12 or so, I got really into, like, Bowie, the Beatles and the Stones.
Right. So what sort of year would that have been?
So I'm 35. I was born 83. So this is like 95, okay. 96 sort of time. So I remember really disliking the music that all of my peers were into.
And which at that time would have been...
I guess hip-hop and stuff. I really disliked hip-hop.
Did you?
I was like, I hated the hip-hop craze, really. It was only later that I discovered how wonderful it is.
Right, that's interesting, isn't it? So yeah. you were then at that age when you were kind of... sort of establishing your own taste.
Yeah.
Kind of thing, which
sort
of happens 12, 13, 14, sort of
yeah.
thing.
Yeah.
You were going back to the stuff from my youth in a way, Bowie.
Yeah,
you
know? Absolutely. And I would play computer games. I'd like play a computer game and put on a record. And like if I had the option in the game to turn off the music in the game, just put on like Ziggy Stardust or whatever, right. You know, and just listen front to back.
Where did that come from though?
That was my dad's collection.
That was your dad's influence.
Yeah, right. His collection, yeah.
So you weren't kind of rejecting that in a way. You,
no,
you,
no,
you
I'm
were
great,
saying this is what music is.
Yeah, I embraced
not
it
what's
totally.
Current.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And then like my brother was quite a big influence. He was into rock as well, but he got quite into like metal and stuff. So I got a little bit into like Metallica and all that sort of stuff. Not for so long. I had a like a weird, some records to me are like very sort of, they stand out in my memory, like Europe, Final Countdown. Uh-huh. I remember having that on cassette for some reason. Like, I loved that. I don't know when that was, probably a bit before.
80s, wasn't it? But big hair rock type.
Yeah,
stuff.
Big like yeah, glam yeah. rock sort yeah. of thing. I remember the first records I owned were, I can't remember if I bought them with like pocket money or someone bought them for me. It was Your Unbelievable, EMF,
yeah.
and Gazza, Paul Gascoigne,
yeah.
Fog on the Tyne.
They're right with Lindisfarne, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Novelty
so those
record.
Two, like, I think they were both 45s.
Right.
So they were the first records I ever owned. And that would have been very young age. So then, yeah, then I got to...
Can I?
Yeah.
I get You're Unbelievable, but why Gazza?
I don't know. I was like, I'm a Tottenham fan.
Oh, right, fair enough.
And Gazza, you know, he was an icon for Tottenham. And he was at the height of his fame. I guess he... Was he a Tottenham player at the time of that record? I don't know.
Brave of you to admit to being that being your first record, The Fog on the Tyne.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I might have been like 8 years old.
Yeah, yeah. at the moment you've had all these jukeboxes around you, rock and roll from an earlier era, but then your dad's taste has obviously rubbed off on you. It's say, you know, classic rock, let's say, and Bowie and the Beatles and so on, and you've kind of
James
turned
Taylor's
your back
another
on,
big
oh,
one.
Oh, fantastic!
And, you know,
yeah.
He was really into James Taylor, Johnny Mitchell.
So all of that, which, like I say, is kind of all of my kind of, you know, if you like, has that stayed with you in terms of your taste?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that would ever leave me, but it's not something that I often listen to. But sometimes I get like a little wave of nostalgia, and it's a really pleasant thing. Yeah.
Is there anything from growing up that you heard around you that you actually hated at the time, but you've now come round to?
No, I don't think I would. If I hated it at the time, I think I was just like all of these, and in some way. Maybe it was the format that came first. It was like, I just loved these artifacts. You know, I loved the act of putting on records and listening to what was on it. It almost didn't matter if I liked it or not.
Where did you progress from, you know, from Gaza? what direction did you go in at that sort of early age?
So, yeah, so like early age, like... I think I got into like kind of glam rock type stuff, Queen and Europe, The Final Countdown, and then from there, following my brother's lead into like more heavy sort of Metallica style. Never got into like death metal or anything like that, but we were very much into like guitars, like heavy guitars.
Something like Metallica, is that something you'd listen to now?
No, not really.
So. Hip hop was going on around you without you taking interest.
I think there was a time when I sort of had a total rejection of hip hop because it didn't feel like real music, because it wasn't guitars, it wasn't live bands, it felt like cheating. I mean, there was a lot of bad hip hop around, and I think that's what people were into by then, by the kind of mid 90s.
Yeah.
But then there were a few little kind of silly breakthrough things like Vanilla Ice. I remember being quite into. I think I was in maybe I was in primary school when I heard Vanilla Ice or something. And but
it's a very poppy version.
I don't know how I got into it. I can't really remember.
I mean, it seems to me that if I've got this right, the age you are, a logical place to go from, you know, classic rock kind of thing would maybe the whole Britpop thing.
That's a good point. I was totally forgot.
You've written them out of history.
I was really into Oasis. Yeah. I was a massive Oasis fan. Liked Blur as well. Loved Pulp. There was a compilation called Shine something. Like, just had all of the Britpop. You know, just everything. And I played that to death. That's kind of almost disappeared for me now.
Has it?
Yeah,
that's
kind of. I'm just not into indie music at all. Yeah.
Yeah, you've been quite a change in your taste.
Yeah, definitely.
There? Yeah. No, because I'm interested in that thing that we all go through kind of phases of getting really into certain things and then just rejecting it. But then, you know, maybe decades later going back.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe that will happen.
You know,
maybe
it could do.
I think as long as there's a nostalgia attached, there's a possibility that will happen.
So you're saying there was a lot of bad hip hop. Mm. What was the good hip hop from that era that you would maybe still listen to now?
Oh, Tribe Called Quest, probably. I mean, when people were getting into hip hop around my age, and I was saying no, I want Bowie, I want the Stones. I think the hip hop they were into was kind of like gangster rap sort of stuff.
Yeah,
I almost didn't really realise that there had been this kind of stuff gone before it, or this kind of backdrop to it. And that's really fascinating. And so Tribe Called Quest are probably a perfect example of that.
But did you have to kind of backtrack to catch up with that, if you like?
So I think what happened was I hit about 13, 14, and the kids at school were into drum and bass, and in the same sort of way I was like, is that really music? But by that time I was kind of really, I had a real desire to fit in, so we used to like hang out together and play drum and bass. Some of the kids would like try and MC, and somehow I did get into it. I did start to really appreciate it. I just started to think, yeah, I like this. And then I ended up kind of learning how to DJ from there, like drum and bass records.
Okay.
And that was just so fun. When I first had two decks and a mixer and started learning to beat match them, and then like seeing how you can overlay one track to another and they're all the same BPM more or less. So pretty easy. So I think that probably is what opened my mind to the idea of like sampled music or, you know, electronically produced music. So when you then there's like a big hip hop record come out and you kind of go, well, that's got kind of a groove to it. Then you start to think a bit more about like, where does that come from? How do they make that?
But you're kind of almost then you've turned, it seems to me, from a consumer to a participant in a way.
Yeah, I suppose the feeling of it being current, like the drum and bass stuff. Like we'd go on the bus to school, like, and we'd all be like, you know, oh, minimum, all this kind of listening on our little Walkman speaker things, and yeah.
Yeah.
It was really fun.
Because, I mean, you know, if I know this much about hip-hop, isn't a lot, I know this much about drum and bass, you know.
So I still like some drum and bass. I never really get that. It's never really the time or place to play it, really.
One of the things, yeah, I'm interested in is, if you're buying secondhand records, which you obviously are, how concerned are you with, you know, if someone's written their name on it? You know, there's little clues to its kind of history.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah. Yeah, there's a few that I got off Discogs that have got some shop writing on them, or like old stick. Like, I love the ones that are like sale 50p or something. It's not like, you know, I don't know when was 50p like an appropriate price for a vinyl, like, not in a charity shop, you know. Yeah.
So you're not bothered about things being in pristine condition. You know, one of the things that interested me in the shop is the difference between owning these things, these records, as objects, and actually having the music.
Yeah, for me, they're all about consuming the music, first and foremost. And I don't know, I'm a bit torn by it, to be honest. Like, if I could get my hands on a pristine copy of some amazing old rare record, that would be wonderful. But I'd prioritise the quality of the vinyl over anything else.
Do you ever buy something because you think you've got a bargain? Purely because you've got a bargain?
No, never purely because I've got a bargain. Yeah, there might be an element of it. This one I got in Madrid, Grover Washington Jr., that's a kind of dinner jazz album, if you've ever seen it. But it's got the Bill Withers, just the two of us. So I thought, for €6, that's quite good.
Yeah, I mean, that wine light. I mean, yeah. Grover Washington, again, there's some of his which I think are great. But, yeah, buying wine, I quite like it, but it's definitely gone smooth jazz. He's still very good, though.
Yeah, know? Exactly. Yeah, yeah, there's a couple of tracks on that that are quite interesting, actually. Mm.
So, yeah, so you're not in it for the possession, if you like. You're not fetishistic about it.
Not really. I mean, you can see how disorganised these all are. They're not alphabetical. They're not in anything to do with genre or anything like that. We just kind of, they're just free for everyone to, like, play. I want them played, basically.
Yeah, genre's a funny thing, isn't it? Because once you you say, oh, well, I like this and I like this, you kind of rule out.
So yeah.
If you say you like rock,
yeah,
you know, you're kind of sort of painting yourself into a corner, aren't you?
Yeah.
If you like.
Absolutely,
or something for me like metal, for instance, which I've never got on with.
Mm.
That seems a very narrow... Mm. I know there's a huge kind of range of subgenres and so on. But
yeah.
It seems a very narrow kind of path to go down, personally.
But definitely. And I think as soon as you start doing that, you miss out on... Well, so like one of my favourite all-time artists is Prince. And just like that, the genius of what he did was to take what he wanted from, say, rock. Like, he was obviously so heavily influenced by the Stones or whatever. And at the same time... But maybe there weren't that many people who thought you could marry that with like funk music. Yeah. Right?
No, I mean the influences on him. You know, where do you stop? Really? Mm. Have you ever heard his version of A Case of You, Joni Mitchell? Because you mentioned your dad, Joni Mitchell, was one of James Taylor and that sort of era. So you've got into hip hop. Now, did that then lead you in other directions, or you know, backwards sort of historically?
Yeah. So like through hip hop, I had discovered the original samples from my favorite hip hop tracks, and that became a real pleasure. It's like kind of hearing a hip hop track. I go, right, I need to know what this song is, and I recognise that.
Yeah.
You know, being able to recognise it is a real. Yeah.
What are some of the sort of standout ones for you?
So that one, the Arrested Development, Everyday People.
Yeah.
Because that song has been in my life for a long time now. So, and then when I heard that Tappan Zee by Bob James only recently, that was like, it's almost the longer it lasts, the better. He's like, I've had that so long, and now I've connected it where it's come from. And I never asked myself before. I just, it's always been, that it's almost as if that's just an original song to me, like the originally made. Never asked myself, like, what is the sample in that, you know?
Yeah.
Can I Kick It, Tribe Called Quest, which samples Take a Walk on the Wild Side.
Oh, of course it does, yes. Yeah. Which I presume you would have been pretty familiar with anyway.
Yeah.
It being, you know, the classic rock.
Exactly, yeah. Like. Yeah, I was kind of, yeah.
It seems that, you know, from what I've seen, which is only a small sample of what you've got, it's very much around the kind of, you broadly say soul, I would say.
Yeah, yeah. If I had to use one word, I'd probably say soul.
Yeah, yeah. And would you say that's where you are at now?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Can you predict where you might go?
I probably predict that I'm going to travel less and less far from where I am.
Oh, really?
Probably. Yeah, I don't know. Like, I think, because I'm where I'm at now because of where I've been. It feels a bit more, I don't know, like maybe I would have said this at any point in my life, but I'm pretty happy with it.
Yeah.
But like, it kind of makes sense to me, and like, I've collected, it's all a big, you know, ensemble of everything I've liked.
But are there genres that you have maybe rejected or thought, well, I should try that, but I'm not drawn to it or have struggled with?
Yeah, I struggle a little bit with what's that? The South American sort of poppy one called. I can't remember now.
Is pop the word you're looking for?
No, I mean I like a lot of pop music. I really do.
So in terms of contemporary stuff, you mentioned how do you pronounce that?
Toshio Matsura.
Right.
Yeah, he's. I mean, this is an interesting record. It came out this year, I think. It's on Giles Peterson's label. He's a kind of old associate of Giles Peterson, and the reason I bought this was because they were like very nice versions of some tracks that I remember from when I was like at university. So I've been into Giles Peterson, you know, followed him, his like DJ career since university, really. So good like 12, 13 years. I've been to his festivals and so a bit of a like fanboy.
Do you find that curious that you're a fan of a DJ?
No, not really, because, you know, he's been out there bringing my attention to all this music that I would never have found otherwise. And he really is into it, everything, kind of. Maybe not opera, well, I don't know, but, you know. But you listen to his show, it goes all over the place, you know. It goes from Herbie Hancock to, you know, drum and bass and or whatever.
Yeah.
But that's great. And so there's a track on this. So, like, one. I think back in the day, he was involved with Giles Peterson in Ronnie Size's project, like drum and bass, like jazzy drum and bass project. Mm-hmm. Do you know Brown Paper Bag? Right. Well, so that's one that, you know, that's a track that I remember a lot from probably around the time when I was branching out from this kind of peer pressured like drum and bass environment to actually I do like this and I want to see where else it goes.
I'm
into, I'm also into jazz now, and I'm also like it, you know, into like sampling and stuff. I like this because it connects to something that I was into in my past, and I'll, you know, when I'm older, I'll probably, I don't think this is a spectacular record or anything, but it's nice. It like really, it gives me a lot of pleasure to sort of hear this version of a thing that I was really into. When I was really into Brown Paper Bag, Ronnie Size, and that was like, you know, it's like a sound that was different from anything I'd heard before, I think. And so it was like drum and bass, but thoughtful and jazzy without like losing much of its edge.
So it sounds like, you know, the very act of buying, because you're not, would I be right in saying you're being very selective about what you buy?
Certainly in terms of stuff that's out now,
yeah.
So, and probably generally,
So the act of buying that is a kind of, it's definitely a judgment on its on its quality. Which sounds an obvious thing to say, but, you know, often people will buy whatever's out.
Well, when I was younger, I used to go into record shops and walk out and not really know what I'd bought. And actually, I've got, I mean, this is only a fraction of my record collection. Some of it's in Italy, some of it's at my mum's house, and a lot of it kind of doesn't mean anything to me now, because that music doesn't really do anything for me. If I sift through, well, I sift through some stuff the other day, and I was like, oh, put it on, and I was like, no, I don't want this. Not interesting at all.
I'd be intrigued to know what that is, say, from your mum's collection.
No, it's my collection.
Oh, your collection.
That lives at my mum's house.
Oh, I see, right.
So
okay.
Every time I go back, I kind of take a bit more with me. And there's a lot of stuff I think is interesting there, but it's quite a few bits that I think I just bought because at the time I thought they were cool.
And you're beyond that now.
I think so. Like, I'm fairly confident with the stuff I'm buying now that it's going to retain some interest to me.
What are your thoughts on the format of vinyl? The way it's obviously become, it's not you know, the prime medium now, but it's certainly made a comeback. Mm. Do you think that's a fashion thing, or do you think that's here to stay?
I've no idea. I think it's encouraging the amount of like collectors there are out there, and I think There are clubs around in London, at least. I mean, I can't speak for anywhere else, but clubs that are quite strictly vinyl only, you know, analog sound systems and everything. And those are like a little bit, hipster, but like, it's good, you know, it sounds good.
Yeah.
You know, and it's nice to have people who are playing records who have actually lugged their records there, selected them, you know, selected their bag.
Yeah.
And have like bought all that stuff as a physical artifact. But I think I'd be surprised if that persists beyond places like, you know, trendy London. Do you know what I mean?
Right. That's kind of what I'm wondering, because is it a bubble that's going to burst? Certainly in terms of sales over the past few years, vinyl's, you know, rocketed. Does that mean it's back to stay? Or will it wane again? I don't know. Because you've presumably never gone away from vinyl.
Well, I have, actually, yeah. Because, so when I, a few years ago, after, so I blew a lot of my student loan on vinyl when I was, like, had ambitions to be a big DJ and stuff. And a lot of this stuff you just bought because I had the money and ended up not liking a lot of the stuff. And then I sort of had, you know, like financially hard times, so I just, in my head, I almost like switched a switch off where I was like, vinyl's not a justifiable expense for me. But I did have, by that time, I did have a vinyl control, so I could operate MP3s as if they were vinyl, so I can just like have MP3s and pretend it's vinyl, basically. because I was into scratching as well, I could scratch any sound that could be on an MP3, which is great. But it's not until quite recently that I sort of turned that switch back on.
Right, okay.
That so actually, I can allow myself to buy vinyls a bit.
Yeah. And Are you accumulating? Is there a limit to your accumulation? I mean, in terms of, let's say, physical space or the amount you actually want to have, or do you kind of recycle, if you like?
No, I don't really want to let go of anything that I buy now.
Right.
I mean, obviously, I'll review that decision at a later date. But I don't buy anything with a view to recycling or anything. But I can deal with, I'll make more space if I need to. I think I'll run out of money before I run out of space.
Yeah, good criteria. And do you get any pleasure from what you call digging?
Yeah, I love it. But yeah. But that's another thing. Like, the reason I use Discogs is because I have this. I can't really walk into a record shop and walk out empty-handed. So it's a bit dangerous, and it doesn't help me being selective. So my method of identifying stuff I want first and then finding it is a lot more effective for me than going to a record shop. Although I love it, I love digging and finding and discovering stuff.
Yeah.
I don't trust myself.
Okay, yeah. When you got more money, you'd
yeah,
probably
exactly,
be,
yeah,
let
I,
rip.
Oh, yeah, I will. No, totally.
If push came to shove, you've got to save something from the fire, right?
This isn't.
Yeah, you're not allowed that whole box, that fireproof flight case.
I knew that. Yeah, exactly. I knew there'd be a question like this at some point. Yeah.
Well, put it another way. What are the highlights of your collection?
That Montana record, I think, I get a lot of pleasure from that.
The Close Encounters.
Yeah. It's just got so much personality. But that's just the music. It's not.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't really have an inkling of whether that's a valuable record. I suspect I might have got it at an absolute bargain. I don't know what it goes for, but
that's not the point, is
no.
it?
No. No. And if there was something that had been given to me that I really treasured, I guess it would be that. But I don't think so, really.
I'll put it another way. Are there any lowlights in your collection?
Oh, yeah, there's plenty. They're at my mum's house.
Name names.
I just honestly can't remember the names. It's kind of like old breakbeat stuff, you know,
okay,
or like,
right.
You know, types of dance music that
stuff
I was kind
of
getting into.
Time,
yeah, it really
endure.
Hasn't aged that well.
Yeah, yeah.
My big play-out track at the moment is a song I don't own on vinyl. It's Chelsea Rogers by Prince. And it's off the Planet Earth album. So when a big musical experience for me was going to see Prince in his O2 Arena concerts.
Yes, he did loads of dozens.
He sold out, like he did like something like 27 nights in 1 month.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah.
And we had tickets to the after party, and you were never guaranteed that Prince was going to turn up.
Oh, right.
On our night he did.
Yeah.
And we just saw him jam with Maceo Parker and, you know, all his like musicians. And he was just hopping from the drums to the bass to the keyboards. And, yeah, it was just insane. I've never seen anything. I don't think I'll ever see anything like that.
Yeah, I went to the show, not the after party.
And the funny thing about that is, like, they handed out CDs at that gig, right? They handed out the Planet Earth album,
yeah.
Which I've lost since, I think. The CDs mean nothing to me now.
Yeah.
But like, and I must have listened to that album a lot, but it wasn't until this year, at Worldwide Festival in south of France, where I heard Moody Man play Chelsea Rogers in that environment, in that kind of like, people are listening to house music and stuff. And Chelsea Rogers came on and it was like, I'd never heard that song before. And it absolutely murders the dance floor. It's just brilliant. So whenever I've got a good dance floor going, that's what I want to do, yeah. And it's a little bit surprising. And I've had people come up to me going, oh, is this like a Prince remix or something?
Was that the CD they were giving out, like, free with the paper, wasn't it?
Yeah. The one where he's, like...
I love it
he's
somewhere.
Got, he's, got the, he's got the earth on,
yes.
in his hands, yeah.
Yeah
if
yeah.
I could get that on vinyl, I'd love to.
Right, it probably doesn't exist, does it, from that time?
I think it does exist.
Does it? Okay.
It's not that easy to get. I've had a look.
No.
Yeah.
Some Prince stuff is cost a fortune, doesn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah. I mean, I'll show you quickly upstairs
yeah,
if you want.
Yeah.
Just, I don't know what's up there, actually, but
So you got stuff downstairs, stuff upstairs, stuff in Italy.
Yes.
Anywhere else?
My mum's house. Okay, so that's my MPC.
Well, soundproofed up here, is it?
Not exactly.
Or on headphones.
I don't think we really bother. My housemates aren't protected from it, but I only got this MPC recently. I've always wanted one.
Right. So you're still learning.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very fun. It's the draw of it is all in how quickly you can just cut something up.
Yeah.
You know. I mean, I don't really go beyond like little jams, really. But I sometimes quite like to take my beats and take my favourite hip-hop a cappellas and make my own little remix. Yeah. If I can use other people's music to sample, why can't I use other people's lyrics and voice?
Well, you can't do either. That's the
answer, you can't. Yeah. Just for my own enjoyment. Yes,
that's exactly
all it is, really.
Brilliant, brilliant.
I mean, maybe one day I'll do something with it, but I haven't really got designs on that.
Well, until the pleasure you get from music, which is what it's all about, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
It's fantastic. Yeah. Thanks a million for letting me come and have a delve through your collection.
Oh, it's been a real pleasure. Thanks for coming.
That's great.
Definitely.
But meantime, have a look through my Discogs. If there's anything you fancy, just let me know.
Yeah.
And I can send you something as a thank you.
Oh,
you
know, well, that's very kind.
Won't be Esther Phillips.
Sure, yeah.